I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Do you ever... I know we talk about being bloated before. I have a sore stomach at the moment, and I had the worst scenario ever in the entire world yesterday, is when you have a really upset stomach and you have to get on a flight. Oh my God. It's just the having to go back and forth to that bathroom on the flight and doing it is awful. But I was wondering, when we had Foxy on the podcast, he said that he once had to, poop into a bag and wrap it up in
something. Cling film.
In cling, you haven't done that, have you?
Yes, I'm one of the cling film shit wrap brotherhood.
Shit, can I be in that group?
You can. It's quite simple. Do you want me to break it down for you?
Well, the only thing is that at the moment, if I shat into cling film, it would not be very pretty. I don't know how that would work in any way. It'd be more of a water bomb.
I'll be squirting out everywhere. You have to, you know, when we, from the special forces, you know, whenever you, and especially when you're training in the jungle on as part of selection, you know, you can't leave anything, you know, and especially the reason you do, and when you're on operations, when you shit in a bag and you take out, you know, you have to carry everything out with you.
But why are you carrying it? Why don't you just throw it away or bury it?
Because first of all, it can be tracked. So, you know, people can track it. People can find you through that. You know, once they do, then, you know, you can't leave a trace. It's about not leaving a trace. If you're on an observation post, you know, overlooking the enemy, if you leave anything, you know, like a magazine, that's the thing that holds the bullets on your weapon. If you leave that, that's compromised the whole mission. Because from that magazine, they can tell what country you're from, likely to be from. They can find out so much information about you. And basically, you've compromised the whole mission just through leaving stuff on the ground.
Oh, God, I would be literally terrible. I mean,
Sweet papers everywhere.
Oh, my sweet papers everywhere. Just bags of poop everywhere. Yeah. I just literally be doing everything. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to part two of Private Parts. Still here with Ollie. Hey, buddy.
Hey, dude.
Hey, man. Hey, listen, do you know what's so interesting? And I didn't mention the first half. This is Mental Health Awareness Week.
Yes.
Which is amazing. So it's so kind of fitting that we are talking about everything now.
Yeah.
But what I want to say, and we got into this a little bit in the first half, but I feel like you've, until now, and perhaps a little bit before, but until recently, you've sort of always had a battle with life.
Yeah.
And your book, Breakpoint, is an incredible book, and it says on the cover, you're looking at me, this is actually sits next to my bed, and you look at me every night, which is just delightful. God. Yeah. And now that I'm single as well, I'm like, hello, Ollie. But on it says, fear, courage, strength, survival.
Yeah.
And I think for you, your life has constantly been about survival and like battling. And What is, you know, this battle started when you were 10 years old.
Yeah.
When you were attacked by a circus chimp.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, what, can you explain that scenario? What happened?
Yeah. I get asked this question a lot.
I know. I'm so sorry. I hate it when people ask the same question, but it is.
I love this question, though. I love this question. And actually, Foxy loves answering this. Actually, Foxy can tell the story better than me. He's heard it that many times. he admits to that. But yeah, it was a bizarre, absolutely bizarre experience that, you know, as a kid, 10 years old, it was beautiful hot day. And a good friend of ours came round to see if me and my brother wanted to go for a swim. Anyway, this was in Burton-on-Trent in Staffordshire. We crossed the bridge, and as we're crossing the bridge, we saw on the waste ground between the bridge and the swimming pool, we saw the circus setting up. And, you know, we were so excited, so we ran down there. The first guy we sort of met, we said, look, can we have a look around? And all of a sudden, we were looking around these elephants and everything in this big top who were all chained up, and then I sort of separated away and walked into this open space that was, you know, there was an open door, and there was all this green, and I could see this figure sat in the middle of it. And that sort of, as I looked closer, I could see it was a chimpanzee. And for me, you know, I was absolutely infatuated by Tarzan. You know, so for me, seeing that, that was like my little piece of Hollywood right there. I don't know if I wanted an autograph or something, but I was drawn to it straight away. And before I knew it, I was overlooking this chimp, this baby chimp. And it started passing me food. And it was a surreal moment. It was so surreal, you know. I had cats, I had dogs.
It's like an animal being human, but being a human as well, basically.
Yeah. And it was amazing. You know, I'd never been that. And it was a surreal moment. It looked up at me, beautiful brown eyes, and we connected. It was a connection. And then that serenity, it was broken, but almost like a fighter jet cutting through the sky. And I heard this shriek, and I saw in the shadows behind this movement. And that movement turned into a 50, 60 kilogram chimp, Mach 10 towards me, going fucking nuts. And I'm there as a 10-year-old just thinking, oh my fucking God, deer in the headlights.
Did you realise straight away that that was hid there to protect? And
It was on the primal path of protection and, you know, saving, you know, I was the threat, you know, to that chimp. I was another animal that was threatening its young. So in the moment I thought, look, I've got time to escape. This thing pounced through the air, about 24 over the other chimp, and pinned me to the floor, landed on top of me, pinned me to the floor, and was in this absolute frenzy. And like I say in the book, it's a great explanation, especially when you sat under it. It was like a drummer in a rock band, just smashing its arms down onto my chest and biting, trying to rip my face off. And and then blood started flying everywhere, and I look up, and it was almost, you know, it was tearing chunks out of my arm. And I sat there thinking, fuck, I'm going to die. I am going to die.
What did that feeling of death and it's so close death feel like? Was it fear?
It was absolute fear. It was absolute fear. But in that fear, I managed to get some kind of clarity. And that's why the book is called Breakpoint. Because I had to make that, I knew I had to make that situation worse. You know, I had to anger that animal more for any chance of living that day. And that's what I did. I managed to sort of knock it off my chest a little bit. It gave me a couple of inches to be able to pull my knee up to my chest, and I smashed it straight in its chest, and it knocked it off me. And then I managed to sort of scurry backwards, and before I knew it, it was caught by the chain. It couldn't get to me any further. Its teeth were dripping with blood, and I was just there as a 10-year-old, just like, you know, I was hanging out. There's blood all over me. And then the whole place erupted, and, you know, and then... they came over to me and my arm was a mess. And then she turned my arm over and it was just, I saw this massive open wound of all this flesh hanging off. And yeah, it was surreal. But, and then shortly after that, a couple of weeks later, I caught gangrene, nearly lost my arm and blah, blah, blah. The story goes on and on. And actually the story, and it's absolutely amazing in the book, that story goes on for 30 years. That chimp had story carries on. So it's a weird chain of events.
Weirdly, so, you know, because what if you've ever had, and anyone listening has ever had therapy, and, you know, I've had therapy. I had therapy for 2.5-3 years, and I think it's an incredible thing to do because it gives you self-awareness and understand stuff. And even if you, it's not just for people who feel sad or anxious, it's actually just just think it's a really good thing to have. They always talk about your inner child and what happens to you and that what you hold when you're younger. And, you know, mine is about, I have a very big problem with abandonment. So my parents divorced and my dad left and lots of different things happened. And so I have this constant problem where I want everyone to love me because I'm worried that they're all going to leave me at some point. Yeah. And even though I know that's not true, my inner child freaks out. And actually what's amazing about watching you on SAS Who Dares Wins, you see, and especially the celebrity version I just watched, they all become their inner children at some point. They all do. Their inner child sort of comes out. But why that moment for you, you said you held on to it for 30 years. What did you hold on to? What was that moment that stayed with you?
What that taught me, and you don't learn these things after any traumatic event or any massive event in your life, it's the same as mental health. We block them away. We think we can end it by stop thinking, by not thinking about it, but it never happens, you know. And it's like a pressure cooker. It will escape at some point. And that's what sort of happened to me. And in hindsight, you know, and I've always found the silver lining with everything, and that's what I continue to do, always find the silver lining. And that for me, I looked back on that situation and how that affected my life, how that changed the direction of my life. And for me, that point made me realize that regardless of how shit the situation is, you have choices, but you have to make things work worse in the short term for any chance of making them better in the long term. So it's a short-term discomfort for a long-term gain. And that's an analogy for life. You know, people will sit under the chimp for all their life. People will sit under the chimp. You know, it's the same as toothache. It's almost the same when I say it, sort of, if I reflect it to toothache, people prefer to have a life of toothache instead of having the short-term discomfort of the extraction for the long-term gain of that no further toothache. Do you see what I'm saying there?
I totally get you. There's a really interesting thing, you know, people talk about, like suicide and stuff like that. That suicide is an instant relief to a solvable situation.
Yeah.
And people either, what they'll do is they will just deal with, you know, and they won't actually go to the crux, or they'll find the quickest escape to something because they don't actually have to really deal with the whole problem. And that analogy of the chimp is so true that people will, 100%, they will sit with the chimp on their chest forever because it's far easier doing that than actually having to sort of fight back with it and things like that. But it's interesting because with you, because, you know, I feel, you know, 10 years old and a chimp is on top of me and it's biting and fighting me, I would have no clue what to do. And it's almost weirdly a metaphor for your life because you've been in these battles and things like that. And it's like that chimp, without that chain, that chimp would have killed you.
Yeah.
You would be dead.
Definitely.
100%. Yeah. And I feel like in life, you've always managed to protect yourself, but there's always, you're always facing that death right in the face. And you said you were obsessed with the military and you joined the military and you wanted to do that. But what was it? Like, was it the sort of the fascination with death, or was it the fascination with being part of a group? What was the fascination behind it?
Yeah, I actually spend a lot of time thinking about this. And I think there's, you know, I come from a military family. My grandfather was a captain in the Royal Engineers. So I'd come from sort of a military family. So it felt natural for me to join the military. It was a natural thing. But I've reflected on this so much. And, you know, the book covers this, you know, my life journey sort of in the military, post-military, and even before the military. And I was always chasing that. I had a desperate need for that danger all the way through my life. I was chasing the threat all the way through.
Because it excited you?
Yeah, I feel it. You know, I just feel that, you know, as a 10-year-old being so close to death, it made me quite emotionless. It made me really fearless. I didn't have any consequence, no fear, nothing. And I was pushing and pushing and pushing. And even when, you know, my time in Iraq as a mercenary, some of the things I look back and that I did, you know, I was chasing death.
Yeah.
It was really weird when I look back, and I still haven't
processed it
properly. But, you know, I was chasing death. I was putting myself in some fucking mad situations.
And look, and I know with these things, there's a lot of loopholes you have to jump through and things, and you can't say stuff. But is there something that you can possibly say that you would put yourself in? And you're like, what the fuck was I doing? Was there a scenario where you're like, I don't even need to put myself in the scenario, but I'm doing it just because I'm so excited to feel that fear?
Yeah, no, there was one. There was one situation of many, but one that we'll talk about, and that was I was in Baghdad, and you know, it's when we first got there, it was quite low level. You know, the statue came down in Ferdows Square of Saddam. Everyone thought the war was over, but it wasn't. The war would, you know, had just begun. And you know, over that time, we basically we lived in the red zone, so that's out of the safety of the green zone. So we lived with all the Iraqis. We had a 2,000 strong Iraqi army that we trained. But really, for us, there was a massive threat against us, so we had to encase the house in steel. And whenever we heard shots outside, we would have to close all the windows. And that's why I talked before, you know, it was almost like self-imprisonment for 6 years. And that's why, in the end, I had to leave through and some other things that were going on. But there was one time where we used to get threat, you know, some warnings from the US State Department. And one particular time, I was the country manager, so I was the boss, you know. And one day we're told, do not be seen on the streets, because everyone was, you know, everyone was after the Westerners. You know, and even sort of your low level sort of criminals knew that if they got a Westerner, that there was a money. We had a value.
Is there a reward? Right?
Yeah, reward to hand them over. So one day they said, no one is to go out. It's full lockdown. And I was like, that, fuck this. You know, it came that day and I was like sitting around and I was thinking, I'm just so fucking bored. And I don't.
Because you didn't like the authority, someone telling you couldn't do something.
Yeah, I hate to be controlled. I always hate to be, which sounds bizarre after going in the military and in the special forces. But I just hate people trying to control me and dictate what I do. And this day in particular, I decided, no, this is not going to happen. I'm going out. I want to buy a rug.
did you do it because you were in a sort of mentality where you were like, fuck it anyway. And you're a bit like going, I don't want to listen to anyone anymore because you were just feeling unhappy in a sense.
Yeah, no, there is that. But there's always the thing. I mean, even I was a bit of a pain in the ass in the special forces. And Foxy will tell you that because I questioned everything. I questioned fucking everything, you know. And if everyone was going marching forward, I would look to what's happening left and right. You know, I just
to do it.
Well, just not just that. I just think that I hate the status quo. I hate conformity. I hate with social conformity pisses me off. And
but
everyone,
you joined the military. I know
exactly. No wonder I didn't find my purpose. But you know, and that's why, you know, when we did stuff, I was like, oh, why are we doing that? It doesn't make any sense, you know. And it just caused so many problems, you know. It's like the hierarchy just hated me for, like, they just knew that any kind of, right, we're doing this mission today, and blah, 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 why are we fucking bothering? That's just stupid. And they're like, shut the fuck up, Ollerton. But yeah, for me that day, it was like, right, I'm going out. I want a rug. I wanted a silk rug from the streets of Baghdad.
To put where? What
are you in my house back home. I wanted one of these really nice silk rugs. They were a lot cheaper than you get them back home.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Yeah, so I thought, and I wanted something authentic. So I'm like, and we had like, I had all my bodyguard teams, you know, I had all my own weapons and stuff, but we had our own bodyguard teams as well, which were locals. We ran a sort of low profile operation. So we used all the locals for a lot of the stuff we did. So I was like that to the lads, right, I need to go to the Mansour district, I want to buy a rug. And they were like that, no, Mr. Ollie, you have to stay in today. I'm like that, no, we are going to town to buy a rug. So, you know, under duress, they followed what the boss said, and, you know, we got in the cars, we headed to Al Mansour, and I got out of the car, we parked the cars out, the bodyguards all get out, and made my...
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
My way into the shop. And, well, I sort of crawled my way into the shop, so I wasn't seen. And then I'm laying on the floor in this rug shop. You know, I've got...
At that point, are you realising this is not a... I'm crawling into
but
a
But I'm
shop.
Loving it.
Because it's a bit of fear again.
You're it's that, fear. That, it's, that I'm loving it. You know, I'm laughing because everyone would say... You know, everyone would be saying, you shouldn't be doing this. And I was doing it. It's great. And there was. I was laying on the floor in this shop with this owner of the shop, you know, and I'm there with a wad of... you know, US dollars, but, you know, negotiating with this guy, and he's after 2,500, and I'm like, no way, I'm not paying that, and blah, blah, blah. I'd got the one that I wanted. So anyway, did the deal. As I'm doing the deal, like, the bodyguard comes flying through the door, and he's like, Mr. Ollie, we must go. We have to go. The militia, they're coming. And I'm like, fuck. You know, it's got real. It's starting to get noisy. And I can then the rounds start coming down the street, and I can hear the bullets raining. And I'm like, "Fuck, it's got real." You know, I've got body armor. I've got my MP5 next to me, machine gun. And then I basically, the guy came in. One of the guys, I'd chucked the $2,000 at this guy. One of the bodyguards came in, grabbed the rug, and I've just pelted my way to the car. I managed to get in the car. And you could see all the movement behind. And I mean, it's always packed traffic. You could see all the movement behind. The cars coming down. The militia were coming down, running down the street. And we managed to just get out. And as we're going down, bullets are flying down. AK-47 bullets are flying down the side of the car. Two came through the back window. And I'm hitting the back seat. And I'm laughing. I'm just laughing. You know, and then I got away, got the rug. And the rug is, like, at home now. I've got it on my... I don't allow anyone to stand on the rug. It's safe. Mm-hmm. It's on the wall. It's beautiful. And I walk downstairs every morning. I just look at it and I shake my head with laughter. But looking back, it was that was fucking stupid.
Because it's probably symbolises that moment where, firstly, where you realise where you were and where you are now.
Yeah.
And that moment of you just go, Jesus, what, you know, that just craziness almost in your head that you just were
madness.
Constantly, madness. It was madness. You're constantly striving for that next high, that next hit, those kind of things. And did you, it's so interesting because when you went into, because you did Royal Marines.
Yeah.
You did, and correct me if I'm wrong, you did SBS.
Yeah.
And then you did SAS.
No, what happens basically, you there's a joint selection process now.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically Royal Marines, and then you go into the, you do selection, Special Forces selection, UK Special Forces selection, which is joint SAS and SBS.
Yeah.
So at the end of that selection, once you've passed, you can either go to the SAS or the SBS. And I chose to go to the SBS, same as Foxy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but what's amazing about it is that we hear all the statistics, you know, 95 or 99% fail rate.
Yeah.
You know, you had something like, I think it was something like 300 people in your class and five of them went through.
Yeah.
But then you, and I know you've repeated this movie, you had to do it again.
I know.
You had to do it.
Yeah.
Because a farmer sold you out.
Or he sold us out. Yeah. We had an altercation with the Welsh farmer. And
Because you say the process over 6 months, you did different locations, but you're in the Brecon Beacons and you can explain the story. It's much
easier. Yeah. No, it was the final phase. So pretty much anyone that gets to that phase is you know, badged as an operator, and you know, we could see the end, you know, and like you just said, it was, you know, there was only a few people that had passed, and that phase is, you know, you're being chased across the Brecon Beacons, and then at the end of that you get collared and then you're put in the bag, so interrogation for 36 hours, which is horrendous.
And that interrogation is where you've got your headphones in stress position.
Yeah, it's not headphones, actually. Actually, on the real one, it's just the room. It's got massive speakers all the way around, and it's just... And you're kneeling on the sharpest, horrendous gravel on the floor for 36 hours and then taken away for questioning every few hours. So you know, sort of
36
hours. And going into that, it's like you're...
Do you know you're going into it? Do you know it's about...
You know you're going into it. You know it's going to happen, but you have no idea how... You know, you're in there for the first minute and you think, is that a minute? And then you think, I've got 36 hours. And the mental torture that creates is just... But before you know, the first hour is the worst. And then before you know it, it's... it just doesn't stop. It's relentless. And
how do you mentally get through something like that? How do you
millimeter by millimeter?
It is
second by second.
God, it's so funny. Have you ever watched or read the book Touching the Void? Have you ever seen that?
Like, yes.
The guy. Yeah. So if everyone doesn't know, basically two climbers, two friends went up K2, I think it was, and storm hit anyway. He woke up and one of his friends had dragged off the cliff and he was attached. And so he had the decision to cut the rope or not. And he cut the rope and the guy fell into the ravine. He thought he had died. And the guy who found the ravine tells a story because he had broken leg, ruptured thing, frostbite. I mean, he was dead. He was dead. But he crawled himself back to base camp and he crawled and he said, if I can get to that next rock, I'll do it.
Exactly.
And he did it like that. You did it like that.
And that's exactly it. And when time, the thing is, this is the way, well, you have this, and I'm a great believer in visualization of the end goal. You know, that's the driving force. That's the thing that pulls you forward. But the thing is, that is the bigger picture stuff. But when things really get hard, you need to forget about the bigger picture and you need to pull it into 1 meter square. Focus exactly what's going in and 1 meter square. Don't think outside of that and just take one step forward. Because if you think of the bigger picture at times like that, the outcome is too overwhelming, too unachievable.
So you literally have to go through it bit by bit.
Bit by bit, by second.
That's really good advice in any scenario, because I think what I do a lot of the time is I do something where I catastrophize stuff. So I will, I'm going to break up with my girlfriend. And then I broke up my girlfriend. I'm never going to find anyone else. That means I'm never going to have kids. I'm never going to... And it goes spiraling out of control. And the end process is too overwhelming. Where in fact, if you just process that thing bit by bit, that actually helps you get through it, right?
But that is a great thing. When it comes down to mental health, that's exactly the process you must go through. When you're really struggling, that's what I went through. You know, when I was stuck in this world of negativity and a repeat cycle of yesterday, you know, it's because the bigger picture is so overwhelming. Feel so worthless and everything else.
And trapped
in that repeat cycle. But then you do have to put a process into play. And although that process can seem like unachievable, providing you keep progressing forward, you keep moving forward, keep momentum, second by second, you will move yourself out of this plateau. You know, but if you don't put a process in place and you rely on emotion, you will be caught in that cycle forever. And one thing I'll say about mental health as well, I mean, I speak to a lot of people about mental health and I hear it going on a lot. I do feel there's too much focus on the problem and not the solution. What are you going to do to move away from this? And I see a lot of guys in the military. And I know it's interesting on Instagram and blah, 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 but they're repeating the trauma. And as long as they put pictures up of it, write stories about it, do this, that, and the other, they're always going to be caught in that world. And that is the problem I see with mental health. When it comes to mental wealth is how you're going to move away. It's a step ladder. You've got to put a step ladder into that hole and get on every single rung step by step. And the only way you can do that is by putting a process into play. You've got to make a plan and stick to a process and forget the emotion.
Holy shit, man. You've been through this entire... Your life is incredible. The fact that you can go to such dark places, such kind of like hectic situations and come out the other side being incredibly empathetic and warming and welcoming and all these different things. And, you know, you have a lot of empathy now and you have... you know, you're very humble and very kind. But when you were in the military, do you think you had any empathy at all? Do you think you just that emotions was just cut out?
No,
because I actually listened to there's a lovely podcast called How We Fell by Elizabeth Day, and she's actually coming on this podcast, and she spoke to Andy McNabb, who wrote Bravo 210, I think, is it
2-0,
and he spoke about he just had no empathy. He just, you know, there was an amazing way where he spoke about how there was a 14-year-old boy that had to be killed and they just bundled into a bag because they just had to move on. And that's what they had to do. And I don't know how mentally you can just get through those things. You must be Your mental strength is just baffles me how amazing it can be to go through all these different things, through drink, through relationship breakups, through the military, through the chimp, to get to a point where you are now, where you're an author, you're an entrepreneur, you're a part of a TV show called SES, Who Dares Win, to go from all of that darkness to become this, and you are successful.
Yeah.
100%. You know, forget everything. You're incredibly successful, but how do you mentally get there? How do you mentally do it?
Well, first of all, I mean, we talked about Thailand. That was the epiphany. That was when I realized helping others is my purpose in life, my forte. It gives me so much drive to help other people. Now, and it, you know, that mental process I went through of, you know, I put a process into play to get myself from the, I mean, when I went out to the toilet before, I was thinking about how I was. You asked me how I was, how I used to think.
Yeah.
And that made me reflect. I couldn't even talk. I was in such a bad place. I couldn't even, I feared talking to people. I couldn't talk. I couldn't string a sentence together when I was at my worst. And now I look at myself, you know, it's totally different. You can't shut me up.
Yeah. It's true. I try.
Yeah. But, you know, and then that makes you, it makes me realize that how far I have come, you know, because you get told by other people, but it's, you know, it's so hard to actually reflect. And then, and really, you need to take a step out sometimes and really appreciate how far you have come. But I never got, the only way I could get there is putting a process into play. And the big thing for me is how I started to, and another thing that, you know, I talked about before, it was stop chasing the happiness externally because it wasn't there. You know, I've spent so many years, 10, 13 years or my life looking for that purpose, looking for the happiness.
Whether that's the military, whether that's girlfriends or situations, holidays, whatever it was, right?
Yeah, just finding that trying to find that external fix. And it's not. And then the day I realized it wasn't there was, again, another epiphany for me. And when I started to adjust and started to look and understand how we work as humans. You know, we're born into these human bodies and we all jump in there and we think we're fucking experts, don't we? And we're like, hey, we're like in a fucking racing car. Yeah, I'm a fucking expert. I'm going to drive through life and I'm the best that there is at this. And we don't actually understand what the hell's going on. We don't understand how we work as humans. We don't understand how the mental processes are there to protect us, but can also bring us down so far that into a world of depression. And when I started to understand, I read a book when I came back and I started to become, for me, I became awake. I started to become awake. I feel that so many people in life are going through life, they're unconscious and they will die unconscious. They don't actually, they're being systemized. They're part of the system. They are just in that, you know, I look at this as well. I refer to it as the LPS. It's like a GPS, but it's a life positioning system. It's like when you get in your car, you switch on the GPS, you don't have to think. And you follow a route and you get there and go, fuck me, that was the worst route ever. I knew a better route, but you weren't prepared to think. And people are on the LPS, the life positioning system. They're doing the same in life. They're not thinking. They're just following these footprints instead of making their own.
Mate, I couldn't agree more. I chatted to this guy the other day who was working at Goldman Sachs. Mm. And he was making a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
But he was on that LPS.
Yeah.
And he got on actually, weirdly, a bus in Thailand. And this American guy came on. He was like, oh, God, this guy's going to come sit next to me. He didn't want him to. He just wanted to have a little bit of time by himself. And the guy came, sat next to him on this bus. And they started chatting and he realized, I love that term LPS. I mean, that's such a good term. And he said to him, you're on the LPS. He said, do the rocking chair technique. Imagine you're 90 years old now in your rocking chair on your porch. Are you happy with your life? Are you happy with what you've achieved? Are you happy with your journey that you've done? And this guy said, he wasn't. He came back from Thailand. He quit Goldman Sachs and he went and set up a company, which is now a great company called Change Please, which is a coffee company. He only hires homeless people. He hires them for a year and houses them for an entire year and then sends them out into the world. And he was just like, that's what it's about. Mm. Loads of people are on this journey without, you're part of the system. You just go, because we grow up with this thing, right? We have to pass this exam and get this test means get us into this job and we're just going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
And that's not right. You've got to live life. And a lot of people aren't living life.
But look at that guy. Look what he's done. He's helping other people and the satisfaction and the purpose.
Yeah,
and what does he take with him to the grave? He takes purpose. Mm-hmm. He doesn't take all his cars. He doesn't take his house or his money, his wealth. He takes purpose. You take purpose to the grave. That's the only thing you leave with. You start with purpose. And some people don't end with purpose. They lose it along the way and never get it back. But if you're on your deathbed, if you want to call it that, if you die with purpose, that will put a smile on your face.
Mate, it's true. You don't want to be the richest person in the graveyard. You want to give all your riches away, knowledge, whatever, money, whatever it is. And actually, so true. If you die with purpose, then you're going to be just wealthy in life and everything. I'm in love with you.
I'll tell you what, though, I follow a lot of these inspirational people. I've had a bit of a shift in mindset just recently because we are sort of programmed to chase wealth, wealth. How many cars have I got? How many followers have I got? It's all about how I look from the outside.
Sure.
And, you know, I won't mention the name, but I look at one guy, he's like worth over 500 million real estate. And I idolize this guy. I want to be like this guy. I'm going to follow his process. I'm going to do this, that, and the other. And then I look at that guy and I think, when does he stop? When does he understand enough is enough? When does he enjoy life?
You never do.
No. You never do. What is happiness to you? Happiness to me, I'm already happy. I mean, if I die tomorrow, then I'm happy. I'm happy in what I've achieved. I'm happy I feel I've got more of a legacy to create. But, you know, I'm happy. And that is the best wealth you can have.
Just one more question. Do you fear death at all or no?
I fear death if it comes from not natural circumstances.
Okay.
You know, an abrupt kind of death, like being attacked by a chimp.
Yeah. But as in death,
no, I don't believe. I feel, and this will freak people out, that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, a life experience. And I don't believe it ends.
Dude, listen, before we head up, we've got to say that your book, you got it. Listen, go out and get this book, Breakpoint. It's number 3 in the Times bestseller at the moment, isn't that right?
I'm
and it's going to be rising. You should, honestly, buddy, you should be so proud of yourself.
Thank you.
Also, the other great thing is you should go and sign up to Breakpoint, which is, well, you can explain. What is Breakpoint?
Well, Breakpoint is, you know, that's an extension of everything I've done in life. It's using my, you know, expertise as a special forces soldier. Fox is involved with me and also Billy from the show. So, and Breakpoint, like I keep saying, it's about putting yourself in a short-term discomfort for a long-term goal. It's not about the things we do at Breakpoint. We have events, we have corporate, we do a lot of corporate work, but it's taking people and changing their limiting beliefs through a practical activity, which causes a shift in the way you think.
Yeah, it's insane. You could go and sign up to it, go and get the book. Go and follow Ollie Ollerton on Instagram as well. Ollie, you're an incredible guy. I thank you. You're so busy. Thank you for taking time out to be here today.
Thank you, mate.
I'm going to go and literally fly home now. I can't wait because I feel great. Buddy, I really appreciate it. What we like to do at the end of the episode is leave our listeners with something inspirational.
Okay, you put me on point now.
I'm going to put you on break point right now.
One thing I'd like to say is we are not our thoughts, we're our actions. And, you know, we're responsible by our actions only. So don't feel pressured by the things you think, but make sure that you have a plan, put it into process and don't rely on emotion.
Boom. Ollie, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Awesome.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.